Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Group Answers Podcast, a weekly show designed to resource, train, and encourage small group leaders. Each episode considers current trends and resources, as well as timeless truths and methods of discipleship. It's hosted by Brian Daniel and Chris Surratt. Now, enjoy the show. Well, hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Group Answers Podcast. My name is Chris Surratt, and today I am your only host. Normally, I've got my sidekick, Brian Daniel, with me, but he's got a family commitment today, which I think actually means that he didn't want to be with me. I think he made up something. He said, I really don't want to hang out with you, and so he's got another commitment. No, I'm just kidding. Brian does have a family commitment, so he's not here. He'll be on the next episode, but I'm excited to be here, and because I'm by myself, I thought I need to bring in somebody that I know well, a friend, to hang out with me. And so I invited Will Johnston to hang out for the next few minutes. Will is the director of Build Community at Eastside Community Church in Anaheim, California. And he is a friend of the podcast. Will, you've been on at least once before, right? Maybe more than that.
Yeah, it was once or twice, but yeah.
So I think we may have had you on before you moved or right after you moved, and then we've had you since. And then you may be up to the three timer. We'll send you like a pencil or something with the Group Answers logo.
Nice.
You know, it's kind of funny because we're recording this on Zoom, and as I'm looking at Will, he's literally in his closet recording. I love that. Is that like one of your favorite places to be in the house when you want to escape?
I can't say that it's one of my favorite places to be. That's my garage, but it's a little bit noisier out there. This is just where I go to record things like this because it kind of, I've got all kinds of clothes and stuff in here to deaden the sound. So
yeah, no, I love it. I live in a condo basically in downtown Nashville, and we don't have a closet that's big enough to do anything. And to be honest with you, closets, and you know that from living in DC, I'm guessing your place in DC was not that large.
Yes, no, this might be the largest or larger than any closet in our house in DC, the one I'm standing right. And it's not that big, but it's still larger than those.
Yeah, we have bedrooms now that are about the size of the closets we had when we lived in the suburbs. It's just,
oh yeah.
It's a different world, but
it very much is.
Yeah. So you're in Southern California, Eastside Christian, one of my favorite churches around and one of my favorite places to live. If I had a lot of money, I would go live in Southern California, but I don't. So I live in Nashville now. I love Nashville too, but I want to talk a little bit, Will, because you have an interesting perspective with your background, because you've not always been a pastor. Before you were a pastor at National Community Church in DC, you worked on Capitol Hill. And so that was your world. And this is airing a week after what happened, what we all watched, the riots at the Capitol in D.C. and everything that went down with that. And that was just a really hard day watching that Wednesday. And I put a post up. You know, I've been to the Capitol many, many times. I love Washington. Whenever I would go out and do anything with Heather, you guys at National Community, I would take time to go visit things. And Capitol is one of my favorite places. So I know that feeling of being in there and just the reverence of the place. And I said on Facebook, and I mean this, I always had this feeling that if I stepped even one foot over the line that you're supposed to be in at the Capitol, somebody would automatically shoot me. I just, you know, not that they had guns anywhere that I could see, but I knew that there were guys in like black suits that were definitely going to take me down. So it just blew my mind to watch, you know, what was happening there. And then I saw a post that you put up, Will, because you actually worked on Capitol Hill. And it was an interesting post just from that perspective. So I wanted to have you on just to give us that. And then we'll also talk about how we can kind of help group leaders have conversations now that are even tougher than they were, honestly, 2 months ago. Can you imagine that? I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable. So just some background. Tell us a little bit about your time on Capitol Hill. What'd you do? You know, did you think that was going to be your life?
Sure. Yeah. So I kind of got to Capitol Hill in a funny way. I actually went to school to study theology, intending to become a pastor. And when I graduated, I kind of just didn't know how to do that. I was like, what do I do? Do I look for like pastor jobs online or like, which is now a thing. But when I graduated, it was not really a thing. Any church that was looking for a pastor online was probably a terrible place to be.
Hey, when I graduated, there was no online. So that's how old I am there, Will.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a different world, a different situation. And so, you know, I was like 21, 22. I wanted to change the world. So when my wife got offered a job in Washington, D.C., we like eating and sleeping inside. So we were like, hey, there's a job there. Let's go. And we went and I was, you know, again, I wanted to make a difference. I wanted to do something meaningful. And so I applied for some positions on Capitol Hill. And honestly, when I got there, I didn't really even know which political party that I wanted to work for. I understood the difference between the two. I wasn't that out of it, but right. I was kind of in this place in life where like, I don't know, but I want to make a difference. I want to do something meaningful. And so I just sent in my resume and ended up getting hired on to work in the mailroom for a senator. Yeah, it's kind of one of those entry level jobs, just get your foot in the door. And then actually ended up doing social media for a committee in the House of Representatives for about a year and a half. And it was a fun job. It was interesting. So doing social media as a profession wasn't really a thing then like it is now.
Yeah, I was going to ask. And so yeah, it was kind of. Social media hasn't been around that long. So you must have been on the front end of all of that.
Yeah, this was like 07, 08. And so especially for Capitol Hill, which on things like that can be a year or two behind everybody else. Right. It really was kind of a new thing. Twitter was, it existed, but no one had ever really heard of it. And so, you know, it was kind of very early on that platform and figuring out how to use that and how to use YouTube and Facebook and different things in that context. And so it was a lot of fun, but eventually felt God kind of renewing that call to ministry. And that was the point at which I stepped out. And went on staff at National Community Church.
It's funny that you equate fun, government, and social media, especially in those days, because I'm sure you probably didn't have a lot of, you know, you weren't the Wendy's lady. You weren't able probably to respond in a non-governmental way.
No, you definitely had to be very careful about what you said and what you did. Part of what made it interesting was there wasn't really a playbook. Like there wasn't, here's how this all goes. It was very much like, I don't know, let's figure it out as we go, which for me and my personality was just kind of a fun and fascinating thing.
That's awesome. And beyond that, I mean, it's not like you moved away and got completely out of government when you went into the ministry, because you went on staff at National Community Church, I mean, you guys are right in the middle of Capitol Hill, DC, all of that stuff. So you had government people come into your church. You probably had Capitol Hill people come into your church. So you were still in that world, right? Even moving into the ministry.
Yeah. And actually, I mean, that experience on Capitol Hill was really helpful for me going into ministry, because I had this kind of shared experience with a lot of the folks who we ministered to. And so I understood a little bit more about, you know, their lives and what they were about and what they were like and kind of how, you know, their sort of day to day than I think I would have otherwise. So it actually ended up being a really useful ministry tool, just having had that experience there.
I bet. And it's just a different, and we've talked to Heather Zimple about it as well. It's just a different type of ministry when you're ministering, especially to a very transient city. And I think we've discussed that with you before, but also I don't think a lot of people realize that there's a lot of lifers that work there that's been their job for a long time. It's going to be their job past this president and probably past the next president. And so there are people to minister to that are going to stay in DC. So the next thing I want to ask you is, what were your feelings having ministered in that city, having worked in that location, as you watched what was happening on January 6th?
Yeah, I, you know, honestly, I mean, it really hit close to home. I for a couple of years lived four blocks from the Capitol building. And, you know, in my time there, honestly never worked in an office more than about eight blocks away from it. So it really was, you know, very, very close to home for me. So I think the first and biggest thing was probably just concern. I mean, just concern for people I knew who live or work around there. I'm honestly, I'm not in touch with too many folks that actually work on Capitol Hill at this point. Although I certainly, you know, there are some that I still know that I either went to school with or from my time in D.C. know who are working there. But so just concern for people. And so I was sending out text and just, hey, just checking in and wanted to make sure you're all right and, you know, praying for you guys and that kind of thing. And so that really was the overriding kind of thing. And then, you know, I think the other feeling was just concern for us as a country, and for kind of what's going on. And I mean, honestly, anywhere you land on the political spectrum, no matter whether you are a never Trumper or a diehard Trumper, I mean, I would think that this is a time that should feel weighty, and that you really like this is something that is serious and complex. And so even if you're pro or anti anything that's happened, whether it's the specific events from last week or anything else that's happened, I mean, this is something that is very serious. And I think I felt the weight and the seriousness of that.
Yeah, I think we all did as we watched that and, you know, the feelings. And I put on Facebook, I'm again old, as we've pointed out before, but I remember very well 9/11 and what happened in 2001. And I had a lot of the same kind of just, you know, feelings that I had on 9/11. Now, obviously the, you know, over 3,000 people died on 9/11, but still five people died during this, but it really felt personal because it felt like something was being attacked that our country has rallied around and means something to our country. So I think it was very weighty. And I've seen a lot of churches that have taken it very seriously that are ministering to people. Just starting with people that probably work there or involved with it, you know, how can the church best minister to the staff and to the people that were involved?
Yeah. You know, I think the biggest thing, and this was, I'm very intentional about what I post on Facebook, and I try not to post anything that's political or you know, really is controversial in that way for a number of reasons.
You're disappointing in that way. I want to see some controversy from you, Will. Come on.
I'm sorry. I'll lash out right after this. I'll go make a really incendiary post about something.
Do it about me. I don't care.
That Chris Surratt, I just cannot believe.
Yep. Wouldn't be the first.
No, I mean, I think it's easy to look at everything that happens in D.C. on television and kind of just think about it as in the abstract. And it's this thing out there, and it almost feels like a movie or a TV show, and it's larger than life. But yes, the reality is that, like, these are real people with real hopes and real dreams and real families and real friends and people that care about them. And so when something traumatic happens, like, it impacts them in very real ways. Like, they're not immune to that just because they have a job that you hear about on the 6 o'clock news. Like, no, there were actual people that were hunkered down in a room in the Capitol complex fearing for their lives. Mm-hmm. And if you think about what that would do to you if you were at your workplace and that happened and suddenly you were, you know, by police escorted out into a room and the door was locked and barricaded and, you know, you're told, hey, you need to stay in here for your own safety. Like that's the experience that these people had. So again, regardless of, you know, your political perspectives or views or anything else, like, this is what folks went through on that day. And so I think just keeping that in mind, I think one thing that makes this a little bit more challenging, you mentioned 9/11, and honestly, I've had some of those same thoughts and feelings and kind of comparison. And certainly the scale of the loss of life and all of that is not nearly the same. But But the fact that it's in the media and on the news, and it's so visible, and it's just continually brought up and talked about, there's some similarities there. I think one key difference, and that honestly probably makes it harder to deal with, is just that whereas 9/11 united us as a country, this is the direct result of a lot of division in our country. Yep. And so the feelings and the thoughts and the support or lack of support that the folks who experience this are going to get is very different if we're not careful to remember that these are people and that they are folks that went through something and are going to need to deal with that and to process it.
Yeah, man, that's a really good point about most of us who have not lived there, or, you know, some people have not even visited. You just think of it as this movie that happens. I mean, you think of, what's that Nicolas Cage movie, National Treasure, which I think is actually doable now if you want to steal the Declaration of Independence. But yeah, no, it feels like a movie. They don't feel like real people. It's kind of like when you go to a football game and people will just yell just incredibly horrible, nasty things at players and referees, like they're not even human beings. Mm-hmm. But that's what it feels like. In, you know, we have football players that go to our church here in Nashville, and you get to know them, and that stuff hurts. They hear it. Mm-hmm. And this is hurting. There are a lot of people that are hurting now because of what happened, even though it seemed like a movie that we were watching. Well, going forward, and let's make it a little bit more personal for most of the people that probably listen to this podcast, we're group pastors, group directors, group leaders, and so we care for people. And, you know, the conversations now, instead of coming together, like you said, after 9/11, they're probably going to get even more divided, and they are getting more divided. And we did a podcast using one of your posts, Will, how to lead a politically divided group. And that was pre-election. This is can't even imagine. It's gotten worse, and it's going to get worse. So what would be some of your advice for group leaders that are kind of helping to guide those conversations over the next week, 2 weeks, probably even months?
Yeah. Yeah. It really is a tough situation. I think one of the things that makes it most challenging, one of the things that concerns me most, that makes it most challenging when you're trying to navigate a conversation about, you know, anything surrounding this, is really just that we used to disagree on what we should do about things. Right. How do we best deal with poverty? Do we raise taxes and implement more social programs, or do we lower taxes in an attempt to create more jobs? And that was a disagreement on the solution to a problem. Now we're actually disagreeing on the facts, on what actually happened in a situation or what was causing a situation. And so if you've got people in your group, and you probably do, people who, you know, believe that the presidential election was rife with fraud, those people are going to view the events of January 6th very differently than those who don't think that there was an issue there. And so that's a difficult situation to navigate, because it's almost like we're living in two separate realities, and we're experiencing the world in completely different ways. You know, I mean, if I'm honest, just personally, like, I'm angry about a lot of things that have gone on in our country over the last several months. And, you know, when I see people that I know post certain things on social media, like I have that same response that a lot of people do. Like I'm angry about that. And I have this temptation. I want to unfriend that person. I want to cut them off. I don't want to have a conversation in real life with them, because I have this reaction to what these people have said that from my perspective is just totally wrongheaded and totally off base. And I have trouble like understanding, like, how do you believe that way? How do you think that way? Why are you like that? And so as I'm thinking about, like, how do we navigate this kind of a conversation in the group, recognizing we have people on kind of all sides of the spectrum and really looking at things in very different ways. And that frankly, we as leaders have some of that ourselves, right? Like we have a perspective and we have our own concerns. And so I think fundamentally the thing that I have to remind myself is that our allegiance to Jesus supersedes our allegiance to America. Mm-hmm. Like, the fact that I am a citizen of the kingdom of God is far more important than the fact that I am a citizen of America. Now, I love my country and I, you know, I'm not anti-American in any way, but I have an ultimate allegiance to Jesus that goes deeper and farther than what's going on in politics, what's going on in my country. Certainly a far deeper allegiance to Jesus than to any particular political party. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the foundation. That's really where we have to start.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's important to, and I think you said this in your article that you wrote for us, to kind of upfront, let's talk about that, you know, understanding that we all have different viewpoints when it comes to issues and political issues, and that's okay, but it can't supersede, who our ultimate king is, which is Jesus. And so I think setting that as an expectation, whenever your next group meeting is, you know, a lot of groups are getting back started. What a way to kick off a group, if it's a new group or if you haven't been meeting for a while. Hey, what's been going on in your world? Well, you know, so, but I think this is probably a good time. I always encourage groups to do like an agreement at the beginning or a covenant. Mm-hmm. And this might be something you want to add to that agreement or that covenant, is that we all come from different backgrounds. We are going to see worldview things in different ways, but we can all agree on this. And that is going to be the end of any story that we any road that we go down in our group, is that it all has to point back to Jesus, always has to point back to grace and point down to the back to the truth of his word. So I think that's really good. You mentioned earlier social media. Any advice when it comes to, you know, you said you usually don't do political stuff. I try not to as well. What's kind of your guardrails on that?
So I think for me, and this is honestly, this is true whether I'm posting on social media or I'm having a conversation in my small group, or, you know, I'm standing up talking to my small group leaders or, you know, anything else. I do not want to preach to the choir. And what I mean by that is I can go out there and I can say exactly what I think, right? And I might even be able to do that respectfully, and I don't have to attack anybody or whatever. But if I just go out and say, here's what I think about racial issues in our country. Here's what I think about politics. Here's what I think about this and that. I have just taken a third of the people and shut them down. Mm. And they now are not listening to me anymore. It doesn't matter how well-reasoned my argument is. It doesn't matter what the facts are behind what I'm saying. It's if I'm just right out front with this is what it is and this is what I think, like, suddenly there's a third of the people that just are no longer listening to what I have to say. And that's true whether that's I post something on the left and suddenly the right's not listening, or I post something on the right and suddenly the left's not listening. Mm-hmm. And so I think for me, I don't want to lose that voice. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just very careful and very intentional about how I communicate and what it is that I say, because I want to bring people along on a journey. I want to, Paul in 1 Corinthians 12 at the very end, before he starts talking about love, he says, you know, now I will show you a most excellent way, or a more excellent way. And I want to be able to show people a better way. Mm-hmm. And I can't do that if they are unwilling to listen to me because I was right. Because I might be right, but if what's important to me is that I'm right and that I prove my point, they're not listening anymore.
Right.
I've got a friend who, she is a smart, thoughtful person, and she was talking to me, and this was several months ago, but she was talking to me about a Facebook debate that she had gotten in, and they're going back and forth, and she's like, by the end of the debate, she's like, I actually didn't agree with the things I said at the beginning, but I didn't want to admit it. And she was being transparent. She's like, I didn't want to admit, like, oh, I was wrong. And so honestly, by and large, I have found that social media is not a very effective forum to engage most of these issues.
No one convinces somebody else anything different on social media that I've found.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I can't say it never happens. I'm sure it does. But from what I've seen, it usually is people kind of talking past each other and not really listening to one another, just trying to make or prove their point. So
it's an echo chamber, right? I mean, that's kind of what happens. I mean, nobody's ever going to convince me that the New England Patriots are a decent and upright team. It's not going to happen. I mean, I've had people just yell.
Even though Tom Brady's gone, you still aren't convinced.
No. Bill Belichick's still there, right? Right.
So, as far as I know, yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So yeah. No. So I mean, you know, I make fun, but we never convince people. Now I do think that it's okay, and I found this in my life that if there is somebody on your feed that tends to drive you to want to respond or makes you angry, it's okay to unfollow, at least for a season. You know, Facebook has this feature where you don't have to unfriend somebody. You can just unfollow them for a season and then follow them again. Because if you find that that's your trigger or that's your, you know, then maybe just unfollow. Don't listen to them for a little while and maybe come back to it when things have settled down. So there are some things that we can do to kind of control that. But you're right. It's not the place to have those conversations. Where is the place to have those conversations?
You know, honestly, I think in person is almost always best. We
imagine that.
So I know, right? Even at church, you know, we've been talking about having some groups that are dealing with some really kind of tricky and difficult issues, and we had planned to launch some this spring, but with everything going on with COVID, we felt like we would have to do them online in order to do them effectively, and so we're like, you know what, we're just going to hit pause, because as great as Zoom is, and as much as it's helped us stay in touch and stay connected, and we've got, you know, tons of small groups meeting on Zoom, we just felt like trying to bring together a group of people who didn't already know one another. Like, it's one thing when you've got pre-existing relationships, but to take people who, you know, 8 strangers and put them together in a Zoom room and say, okay, now we're going to have you talk about really sensitive and really personal and really heartfelt and really controversial things, and trust one another and open up to one another and give each other the benefit of the doubt and not judge each other. Like, we're just like, I don't know how well that's really going to work. And so we hit pause and we're like, you know, we're committed to doing these, but we want to do these in a context where we feel like we're going to be able to be effective. And so once folks can easily enough get into a room together and have those conversations, we're going to start some of those up.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's especially right now with the season. I think it's, if you're starting a new group, it's just going to be hard if it's all new people on Zoom. So I think that's probably not a bad way to go about it. Well, Will, I think we're about out of time. I'm really admiring your shirts that are hanging in the closet behind you. I feel like you've got some quality.
These ones that I haven't worn in years that are just good sound batting here. They're amazing, let me tell you.
That's awesome. But thanks for hanging out and taking some time. And I know this has been quite a week for everyone in America, but especially for guys like you who know people and have been there. And so I appreciate you sharing your wisdom with us. And that's going to wrap it up. We miss Brian Daniel, but he'll be back next week. But we'd love if you would subscribe. If you don't, you'll get it automatically every Wednesday morning when it pops up in your feed. That's how I listen to podcasts. They just show up on my little smartphone that was invented the year that Will started doing social media, my iPhone. But it'll show up automatically. And if you want to rate us, we'd love that too. That helps get the message out on iTunes. But that'll do it for this episode, and we'll see you again next time.